All right, the Bible has a lot to say about the conscience, especially as we look at the New Testament. We got down to about points 18, 19, and 20. We were looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 7 next, but I want to build out that a little bit as far as that point and also take a look at verses 10 through 12. So we'd like to head somebody there. The basis for the study, of course, is what we have in Acts chapter 26. Paul said that he had lived before all good conscience until that day. He is talking about his conscience when he is before the governor Festus, when he's before Agrippa. In the Corinthian letter, he has some things to say about conscience because there were some people who were conscientiously opposed to eating certain food. Go down to the idol market and buy some meat that had been sacrificed to an idol, probably at a really good price, probably the best cut. There were some Christians who could do that in good conscience. There were Christians who could not. So let's pick up our Corinthian reference. Let's start with 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 10 through 12. Who'd like to be a reader for that? 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 10 through 12. Betty?
For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? I'm sorry.
Yeah, 10 through 12, uh-huh.
Okay. And because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died.
Okay, we have two words being used repeatedly in those three verses. You have knowledge and you have the conscience. And I think most people, when they think about the conscience, they would say our conscience is guided by what we know, what we think. And that certainly is true. If your knowledge of the Bible is just about zero, then is that going to increase or decrease the likelihood that your conscience is going to be guided in the right way?
Decrease.
Yeah, we would expect a decrease. You might come from a good home where people are not necessarily religious and they might use biblical principles as far as helping you try to form your character, and you might come out with a reasonably good conscience. But conscience and knowledge, they do go together. Did you guys get the updated sheet in conscience? Okay. All right. We can get you one more. I think, Jimmy, you have another one there? Okay. Very good. All right. We're looking at points 18, 19, and 20. Now, thinking about that as far as a connection between knowledge and conscience, let's pick up. Betty, you're still there, please?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's back up to verse 7 and see what Paul says. Okay, again, Paul makes this connection between a person's conscience and the knowledge that they have, but he makes this additional point. Looking at the end of verse 7, he says a conscience might be what? It might be weak. What do you think he means by that? I mean, usually when we hear the word weak, if we're not thinking about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, weak means what? He's weak, she's weak, they're weak. What's weak mean?
Not using good sense.
Well, okay, I think that's more a biblical definition, but when we use the word weak, we mean poor strength, right? The person is not very strong. So that's not really the best definition for here. It kind of takes us back to where Mom was a minute ago. What do we mean by a weak conscience?
It means it's not strong enough to overcome things that are wrong.
Okay, that's a good definition. Anybody else want to add a little of that? What's the old saying? Somebody says, come do this with me. And the person says, I am not
strong enough.
Well, that's good. I think we can do one more. It's a C word. I am not doing that. I am not, how about comfortable? Anybody ever hear that? I'm not comfortable doing that. What are they telling you?
I really don't want to do it.
Because what's condemning them? My conscience. You might have that in a young person. You might have that in an older person. You might have that in a senior person. Now, it could be fear. I'm not comfortable doing that because I'm afraid I'm going to break a leg. But it could be simply from the standpoint of the conscience. I was trained not to eat that, not to think that way, not to watch that, not to listen to that, not to do that kind of thing. And conscientiously, I'm opposed to that. And that's what we have in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. You can imagine having a nice Thanksgiving meal out there. But if your turkey came from the idol shop, and you are not comfortable eating any meat from the idol shop, what are you thinking about the Thanksgiving meal?
Don't eat it.
Yeah, this is not the place really where I want to be. I'm being put into a spot, into a position which is not very comfortable. Now, let's look at 28. Why would a person reason in that way? Why would that person have that kind of conscience? They're just not comfortable doing something, thinking something, listening to something, seeing something. Why? All right. In the context, that's it. Here is a person, Paul's talking about this idol meat and says, you can't eat it. But if you're going to do that, what do you need? You need to have the understanding that there are how many gods? Just one. And that idol meat, even though it was meat, even though it was sacrificed to an idol, Paul says, it is nothing. There's nothing that's going to damage you. There's nothing that's going to destroy your faith if you have the knowledge. And oftentimes, people will be bothered by something for a number of years, and it's just that they have not gotten the knowledge. Anybody, you don't have to be specific, but anybody ever have a situation where something concerns you, something worried you, and then you got some knowledge, some understanding, and all of a sudden, it was wiped away just like that? Anybody ever have that experience?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it might be something as simple as going to the doc. You see something, and you go to the doc, and the doc says, hey, that's no problem. But they've been worrying about it for 6 months. They finally decided to get it checked out. Well, that can happen with the conscience. Well, then 20B should be obvious as far as the answer. Is that the best kind of conscience to have? The conscience which is poorly informed, the conscience which is uninformed, the conscience which is weak when it doesn't need to be. Is that the best kind of conscience to have? No. And we would say no for a number of reasons. All right, C. How would a person come to realize that he or she has this kind of conscience?
Be influenced by other people.
Okay, you might think about that. You might be thinking, well, okay, I have never done that. I don't want to do that. But why? Why have I never done that? Why do I think that that is objectionable? So you're starting to think, maybe it's my associates. Perhaps they've not been right. Anything else? How could a person come to realize he has that type of conscience?
Reading and studying God's Word more.
Yeah. Interesting experience. I went to the dentist not too long ago and saw this lady and gave her some religious material. She didn't say anything. She said that she reads the Bible and then had a follow-up appointment. And I asked her if she was making any plans for Thanksgiving and Christmas. I started with Christmas. She said, we don't celebrate Christmas. Okay, good job, Brad. And then when I saw her the second time, I said, well, how about Thanksgiving? We don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I thought, well, strike two. But I'm suspecting that she is a Jehovah Witness. With Christmas, that's always kind of a pretty good indication. But when you have Thanksgiving off the list, that I think almost clinches it. So I didn't take that any further. But I thought, how interesting. Here is someone who, when she hears that, because she is a religious lady, she's got some kind of religious conviction against it for some reason that I'm not going to explore any further. It's interesting, but I couldn't help but think, I wonder what she thinks when someone says, we are going to celebrate Thanksgiving or some other holiday. Does she think you're an utter pagan? Or wonders if, how does your conscience allow you to do that if you are a religious person? All right, then point D, how could that kind of conscience be changed? Betty really gave us the answer when she read 1 Corinthians 8, 10 through 12. It can be changed or modified through
knowledge.
So, again, that helps us understand why it's so important to have a good working knowledge of Scripture. All right, anything that you want to add or ask over 20A through D? Let's move down a little bit more. Let's take a look at point number 21. This is going to come from Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 22. Can or should baptism affect a person's conscience? Let's see. Who's got it? Hebrews 10, verse 22, and is ready to go. Maxine?
Let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water.
Okay, when we talk about sin, we often talk about the forgiveness, the cleansing, the removal of sin. And the Bible certainly does discuss that, and that is right. We perhaps do not give as much attention to the conscience being cleaned. Is there a difference between the forgiveness of sins and the cleansing of the conscience? That's a yes or no question.
What was the question?
Okay. Is there a difference between the forgiveness of sins and the cleansing of the conscience?
Seemed to me they work together.
Well, okay, we're not going to deny that. But we're just asking, can we see any difference between the forgiveness of sins and the cleansing of the conscience?
To a certain extent, I think you can, because some people view baptism as, God is the people cleanse me if I am baptized.
Okay.
But then he goes out and commits the same thing again that he was supposed to be repenting of.
All right, now that's a different direction than I was.
And it's
yes.
Something major, not something.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, now that's a different direction than I was going, but that's an outstanding point. You're thinking about, I was looking at the actual act as far as baptized today, cleansing the conscience today, but you're talking about baptized today, and then tomorrow, next week, next month, whenever it might be, you continue to commit the same sin, and then of course you do have a conscience problem. So that's why the Bible talks about living in the light, because with that knowledge, with that understanding, that will hopefully allow the conscience to be cleansed. But and there again, I think it's a good way to illustrate the difference from a different perspective, but yes, that can be a problem. Brenda? That's what you were going to say.
As long as they stopped doing what they were doing before.
Okay. All right, let's take a look at the other side of this coin. Here is a person who is guilty of murder. I mean, there is no doubt that he has gone out, he got angry, he was upset, and he took a baseball bat and beat someone to death. I mean, you got to be pretty angry to do that. All right, definitely a sin. We agree?
Yes.
All right, he's baptized. Has his sin of murder been forgiven?
Yes.
Yes. Do you think that he still might have a pained conscience at times?
Yes.
All right, so now we see a distinction, don't we, between the sin was forgiven. Who's doing that? God. But when it comes to the conscience being cleansed, who's kind of the focus there as far as the doer?
It's our responsibility.
Now let's take a look at Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 22. Maxine?
Can we read it again?
I do.
Let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water.
Okay, let's start at the end of the verse. Having our bodies washed with pure water. What do you think that refers to?
Baptism.
But that's not the only thing that we have there, is it? Having our hearts sprinkled from what kind of conscience? An evil conscience. God is involved with the baptism, the washing of water, the removing of that sin. But the Hebrew writer makes the point that when that is done, the person needs to have an understanding of what that does. If God has cleansed the sin, then what right do we have to hold on to it? We have no right. I mean, it is gone. Now, as human beings, you will find oftentimes that people struggle with that. They fail with that. Sometimes they're still holding on to that. Dozens of years later, maybe decades later. Well, you know, and Paul seems to have struggled with that a little bit when he writes 1 Timothy. He says, I was a blasphemer. I was all kinds of bad things. So at least in his mind, it's kind of difficult for us to, it's not like plucking a page out of the notebook and throwing it away and you never see it again. The mind is able to conjure up all kinds of things, and people can beat themselves up for a lot of things, and the devil can use that in a very effective way. But Hebrews 10:22 tells us that there is a difference and that conscience needs to be cleansed. And when we find Christians who are not allowing that process to occur, then that's something to let them know that that is an issue that needs to be worked on. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at point number 23? Okay, let's take a look at that. Let's talk about the proper training of the conscience. Now that relates a little bit to Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 22. If a conscience is properly trained, going back to that knowledge that we read about in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, things are going to be let go. But Paul expands this a little bit more in Ephesians 4, 17 through 24. Now that's a longer reading, but we'd like all the verses read, and then we're going to go back and look at some of them individually. Somebody want to take a shot at that? Ephesians, all right, Lois, we'll let you, you're a great reader, wrote Ephesians 4, starting with 17, going down through verse 24.
This I say, therefore, and affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer just as the Gentiles also walk in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them because of the hardness of their heart, and they, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. But you did not learn Christ in this way, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus, that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind. 24 also.
Yes, please.
And put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth.
Okay, that's a lot of information. Let's back up and let's take a look at verse 17 again. That's where Paul says, I testify in the Lord that you no longer walk, you no longer live as the Gentiles walk or live, in the vanity of their mind. What do you learn about that as far as the conscience? He talks about a mind and he says, is it messed up or not? The messed up mind or not? Yes or no? It is messed up. So if you're dealing with someone coming out of the world, the person did not live a reasonably well moral life, had no knowledge really of God, and they have really, when we were in San Antonio, they had a men's breakfast. So I was welcomed, so I went out there and sat across from a very interesting man. Younger man, he said, I grew up in the Midwest, over in the Chicago area. He said, I grew up in a gang. And I thought and I acted as a gang member. I did some very bad stuff. Then had a couple kids and said, I need to become a Christian. And in listening to that man, he said, I had to change my thinking. You know, I was used to living in the hood. I lived like someone who was in the hood. And then finally, we came down to Texas, and I told my family, we're going to join the first church that we'll walk into. Well, it happened to be a Church of Christ. And the people there were willing to talk to him and teach him and help him start changing his thinking, as we heard from 1 Corinthians chapter 8. And it's interesting that his conscience underwent a great transformation. I mean, can you imagine the conscience of a gang member and the conscience of a Christian? We would think that there's a great disparity, that there is a huge difference between the two. And listening to the guy talk, he said, it's still difficult for me sometimes. He said, you know, the conscience still bothered him as far as some of the stuff that he had done as a gang member, but he was trying to become more sensitive as far as his conscience. So as that follow-up question, looking at 23C, do at least some need to be told that their conscience has to be reshaped, at least if they want to please God? Now, that's a tough lesson for some people to hear. Some people don't want to hear that, but that is precisely what needs to be done. That is a part of the process. Now, that if there has been anything that we have undertaught in the church over the years, I think this is it. We talk about the forgiveness of sins. We talk about living the Christian life. But I cannot ever remember preaching, and that's a fault of mine, and I can't ever remember anyone else preaching, that the conscience needs to be reshaped. It needs to be reformed. I mean, I guess maybe the thinking is on my part and perhaps on others, if people get the right information and they apply that information, then the conscience will naturally follow. So maybe we've just kind of come at that from a backdoor perspective. But that the conscience does need to be reshaped in many, many minds. And we'll see some examples of that a little later. Anything that you want to add or ask before we make a couple of the points here? All right, let's go down and see what we've got in Ephesians 4 and verse 18. Paul says, darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that was in them, because of the hardening of the heart. That sounds really, really bad. And our question then is, can a conscience be an error because of, number one, ignorance? And number two, because sin has hardened it? Yes. And the devil is certainly interested in doing those kinds of things. So when you are dealing with someone, you are talking to someone, you're trying to pierce some hearts, Jesus illustrates this quite well as we look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You would think, why is the conscience of these people not being pricked? Even on the day of Pentecost, it's often been pointed out that you have about 3,000 people who became Christians on that day. Now, this is kind of a trick question. Was that a large number of people or not?
Today it would be.
Okay. I mean, any congregation today would certainly say 3,000 converts in a single day was massive. Could you argue that, could you argue though that it really was not that many?
How many people there were in total?
Yeah, Pentecost, I mean, you've got people, Jews, coming from all over, and you've only got 3,000 converts from the number of people who would have been in Jerusalem, that city would have been overflowing. So from the perspective of all the people who were in Jerusalem on this particular feast day, that was a very, very small amount. So why were not more created? Why didn't you have 50,000 or 100,000?
Because of their conscience.
Yeah, yeah. The conscience had been hardened. Been hardened against Jesus, been hardened against New Testament Christianity. All right, let's take a look at verse 19 and see how much in uncleanness or type of iniquity there. He says, who, when it comes to feeling, what's true? They are, they're past feeling. They can't feel anymore. And they've given themselves up to lasciviousness. To work how much uncleanness?
All
forms of uncleanness with greediness. Again, that sounds really, really bad. It is really, really bad. We've talked about this illustration before because you have it mentioned in the Bible. But if you have skin that's been seared, or maybe people have neuropathy, what's true as far as, you know, you press on something or you can take a nail or you can take a pin and you can prick your body, what happens?
Numb.
Yeah, it's numb. There is no feeling. A person in the doc, you know, is banging on that or takes the needle out and pricks you in a fairly sharp way. I can't feel that. That's what someone says. What do they say? That part of my body is just not functioning like it should. Just have no sensation there. What happens when that happens to the mind? They can't feel. We have an expression for that, don't we? Cold-blooded killers, right? What do they mean? They mean that someone can go out there and hurt someone, that they can inflict all kinds of injury, and then I'm going to go down, and we've seen actually cases of that in recent times. Then they run down to McDonald's and start, you know, chowing down on a Happy Meal, you know? And you wonder, you ask the question, what are people thinking? Well, what's happened to them? Their conscience has been
seared.
It's been seared. And Paul talked...
going on right now.
Yeah, there is. Paul talked about when he wrote to Timothy, a conscience branded with a hot iron. And that's the image of the searing that we see here in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 19. All right, verses 20 through 22, let's see what Christianity offers. Going back there, I've got to turn the page there. He says, But ye did not so learn Christ, if so be that ye heard him and ye were taught in him, even as the truth is in Jesus. And then we get down to the key part in 22. You've put away that stuff as concerning your former manner of life, the old man that waxes corrupt after the lust of deceit. You wanted that renewal. So when we look at the text, Christianity offers a renewed life. It offers a completely different way. And we need that, of course, if we want to be in a right relationship with God. When the conscience is correct, this is the consequence. Verse 24. We put on what kind of man? We have a
new
man. And he says it's a new man that's created in?
According to God in righteousness.
All right. Created in righteousness as well as
holiness
as well as number three. Is truth there as well?
Yes.
It is. So we're talking about a new person, a new conscience. It's really a new start on life. Let's take a look at Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 14. See what we've got over there. Want to get somebody lined up for that, and also 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 19. Who wants to take our 1 Timothy 1:19 reference? All right, that'll be Steve in just a bit. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 14 before that. Who'd like to be your helper for that one? Hebrews 9, verse 14. Maxine. Okay, when you're ready, Hebrews 9. Maxine.
How much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God?
All right, if you were talking to somebody, let's point out a little of practical information here. You're talking to somebody, and the person says, you know, I'm struggling with some stuff that I did as a young person. I'm struggling with some stuff I did in college, struggling with some stuff that, you know, my conscience bothers me as far as, you know, later in life, made some decisions as far as, you know, marriage and the kids, and my conscience bothers me. Remember one man in a hospital situation, he has since died, but he talked about the fact that he had not treated his wife well. And he's looking kind of over his life, and he says, that is one of my big regrets in life. I should have treated my wife better. Now, that was a conscience problem for him. Now, I didn't pull out this particular verse, but if you have someone who is suffering a conscience issue, how could Hebrews 9 verse 14 help you and help them? I mean, help you in the sense of helping them. Well, let's read it again. Or maybe you have the answer, Maxine.
No. How much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God?
All right, thank you. Can the conscience be cleansed? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. What is the force? What is the tool? It is the blood of Christ. Now, when we think about the blood of Christ, again, let's go back to that earlier discussion we had in class. We think about the blood of Christ in conjunction with what? The forgiveness of sins. And for us, that's true. But that's kind of where we stop. Here in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 14, the text says the blood of Christ also is supposed to do what? It is to cleanse the conscience. So if you're dealing with someone and they're struggling with this, and they say, look, my conscience is bothering me. I just can't get this off my mind. I'm always thinking about the bad thing I have done. If that person is a Christian, how might you try to help them? Come over to Hebrews 9, verse 14, and say what?
Read it.
Well, I think that's a good start. Read it. Are you familiar with the blood of Christ? Well, yes. What does the blood of Christ do? It allows me to have forgiveness of sins? That's true. Does it do anything else? Well, it cleanses the conscience. And you're limiting God, if you will. You're telling God that you have a need that he's already met. And again, that goes back to that knowledge that we talked about from 1 Corinthians chapter 8. So Hebrews is one of the more difficult books to obviously understand, but there are some passages in there which are very easy to understand. This is one of those passages, and that should be a passage which you maybe physically mark, but certainly you make a mental mark of that. So when someone is struggling with a conscience, you can turn over there and say, hey, look, this is something that you may not have considered. Anything that you want to add or ask before we go down to the next one? All right, Tim?
Well, it's saying there that he offered himself to forgive your sin.
Yes.
But he also offered himself to make your mind right so that you can start forgiving yourself and live the way that you should live without feeling so guilty about it.
Absolutely right. Could we make that point at the Lord's table? I mean, look, we've got more than the forgiveness of sins going on with the blood of Christ, but we never hear that. Now, I'm not faulting the people who make the comments at the Lord's table. I'm just saying that we simply could expand that. And what if somebody just made that point? They didn't talk about the forgiveness of sins. Would that be a bad table talk? No. I mean, you know, you don't have to say every single point every single time. So if you wanted to change it up, you could say this is something that's often not talked about. This is a great benefit, and this is the focus today, and make that point. So it's something worth considering. Anybody else? Okay, let's take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 19. Steve, that's going to be you.
Having faith and a good conscience, which some have rejected, concerning the faith, have suffered shipwreck.
Okay, now this is taking us to a completely different realm. We've talked about a bad conscience, and we've talked about how that can be changed, and we've talked about how a good conscience can help us, but now, what's he say? Here is someone who had a conscience that was being properly adjusted. It was being tuned up, so to speak. They got it headed in the right direction. And yet, what does Paul say to Timothy? There were people who took that conscience, which was finally working correctly, and what did they do? They threw it away. So now we ask the question, we're not dealing with the conscience which started out bad. We're starting with the conscience which is good. Can they ruin it?
Okay.
Yes. So when we deal with the conscience, get it right. And then the second half of that is
maintain it.
Keep it headed in the right direction. There are some people who, for whatever reason, decide to make that choice, and it is a very, very bad choice. Following up on that, as far as point number 25, how might a person do that? We know that it can be done. How might someone accomplish that? They can throw away a good conscience.
Just basically turn back to the Lord.
All right. I think ultimately that's going to be the broadest answer that we can give. They decide to do something other. Generally speaking, they're going to find something or someone in the world that's more attractive to them than God and Christ, and they somehow justify that. And we deal with people all the time who will turn away from Christ, and then they will find some rationale. Well, he hurt my feelings, or, you know, it could be we didn't like the color of the paint or whatever it was. and their conscience has started down the road of being seared with a hot iron. All right, let's take a look at one of the keys to a proper conscience, Acts chapter 24 and verse 16, and then we're going to look at some special verses. Acts chapter 24 and verse 16, that's next. Who'd like to be a reader? Betty?
This being so, I myself always strive to have a conscience without offense toward God and men.
Thank you. Now, this builds a little bit on the answer that Steve gave just a little bit ago. You want to maintain that conscience, but is that always easy to do?
No.
What's Paul say about his conscience in Acts 24 and verse 16? I do what? I strive. When a person says they're striving for something, just looking at this from the perspective of our English words, what's it mean to strive? I strive to do a good job. We're putting some effort into it. We're putting our shoulder to the wheel. If we're going to have a good conscience, is it going to take some work? It is. So God gives us that warning through Paul, and it is worth putting the work into it, but it will require some effort. Now, 27, list some of the ways in which we might strive to have a good conscience. Make it practical.
You could think of the good things that you've done.
All right. And think, those leave me with a positive feeling. These things that either I didn't do or I did do and were wrong, they leave me with a bad feeling, so I'm going to strive to be more like the first category than the second. What else? Strive to have a good conscience. What about that point that we made from Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 22? What's supposed to happen? And then the Hebrews 9 reference as well. Hebrews 9 and verse 14. The blood of Christ is supposed to... supposed to erase the bad things in the conscience. If we're struggling with that, then what do we need to do? What word are we talking about now? We need to strive to do what? All right. We need to strive to scrub it. You know, we use that principle in life. Maybe you have had over the last few days, you had a cup, plate, something, especially with Thanksgiving. Maybe you left it set up too long, but you had some stubborn stains in the plate, and the dishwasher was broken, or you didn't have enough of the dishwasher. After that food has hardened, what do you need to do? It's not just run a little water on it and, get the scrubby thing and, quick rinse. What do you have to do?
Throw it away.
Well, I hope not. We're talking about your good china now. All right? It's good china, so what do you have to do? All right, you're going to have to get out the scrubby, and you really have to work it out, right? You're going to have to get some soap on there and say, we're just going to have to take a few minutes if this is going to be clean. And sometimes that's what we need to do with the conscience. There are things that come up where Paul talked about bringing every thought into captivity, and that's kind of what we have to do with the conscience at times. Anything else as far as that point? How we do that? How we put work into it? Charlie?
Your Thanksgiving analogy. You soak it as well. Get around people that you feel have a good conscience, and you soak that in from them and everything as well. So.
Yeah. The conscience is going to be, we think about the principle he's talking about, false teachers, but 1 Corinthians 15, I believe it's verse 33, where Paul said, evil companionships corrupt good morals. The conscience can be torn down, it can be destroyed by being around people who maybe already have a seared conscience, or at least it's been severely damaged, and these people are telling you this is good, this is right, this is the way that you have fun, and it is destructive. Kids have been going through that for thousands of years, and sometimes parents as well. So the influences that we have, whether it's TV, whether young people are on young people, adults, you're exactly right, 100% correct. Anybody else? Okay, let's move down a little bit more and see what we've got as far as some of our references here. We've got about six or seven passages, one of them all read. We'll look at John 5:10 after Genesis 42 and verse 21. So let's get John 5:10 lined up. That'll be our second passage. Mom, thank you. But we'll start with Genesis chapter 42 and verse 21. This is some information about Joseph. Genesis 42, we could back up a few verses, and you can definitely see that Joseph is there, but we just want that 21st verse. Who wants that one? Maxine.
Then they said to one another, "We're truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us."
All right. Now, can you imagine Joseph's brothers? What do they do to Joseph? There are some family issues for a while, obviously, but when he's finally separated from them, where's he at?
Yeah.
All right, he's in a pit. And did he just trip and fall down there?
He had some help.
He had a lot of help. So he's down in the pit. His brothers say, "Stay down there now, we're going to take you out." They leave him, right? You know, they end up trading him. So they leave him with some other folks. He's down there in the pit, and he's not killed. And whatever conscience issues that they had, it looks like they were relatively minor. And then they're able to actually go back and lie to the dad. You know, here's the coat. The conclusion is that an animal got him. Those were some hard hearts. But yet, as you look at several chapters later, Genesis chapter 42 and verse 21, you find that their conscience is awakened. Now, maybe some other things were awakened as well. Maybe they're thinking the truth is finally coming out. But at least there is a spark of a good conscience. We did what was wrong. Do we find that today as far as a conscience being awakened? Yeah. Especially when a person, think about Paul, he becomes a Christian, and now he can kind of see the light, so to speak. He's already seen the light with Jesus on the road, but now he can see, and you can imagine how the memories just must have started to flood over him as far as all the people that he had said bad things against, all the people he had persecuted, all the people who were Christians that he had voted against, all the people that he had helped get beaten in the synagogues, all the people that he had put in prison. It's like, wow, I see things differently now. But we go back to what Betty read earlier from 1 Corinthians chapter 8, that conscience is going to be awakened when people get what?
Knowledge.
And as long as they are ignorant, that we talked about from Ephesians chapter 4, chances are that conscience will never be awakened. So if we want to have people change their thinking, if we want their conscience to be pricked, then they need that knowledge. All right, John 5 and verse 10, bigotry is here.
The Jews therefore said to him who was cured, "It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed."
Now, can you imagine a person reasoning? Here's this guy, you know, he can't walk. He's crippled. He is disabled to a great degree. Jesus heals him. He heals him on the Sabbath. You would think that anybody with a lick of sense and, you know, a halfway decent conscience would be thinking what? Praise God, right? You know, here's this fella, he was disabled, here is this fella, he was crippled, and now all of his medical issues are over. He's got his health back. But what were these Jews thinking? Oh, you're a bad guy because what?
It's the Sabbath.
You did this on the Sabbath. Well, to cure somebody like that, where's the power going to come from? All right, it's going to come from God. So you should have been thinking, we may not understand this Sabbath thing. We've got some questions about that. But we've got at least enough sense to realize that this was not a sin. But these people, their conscience had been so hardened against Jesus that they go after him. All right, 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5, Matthew chapter 27 verse 6. 1 Timothy 1, 5. All right, Maxine, and then we'll get somebody for Matthew 27, 6 who'd like to be that reader. All right, Mom, we're back to you. Okay, 1 Timothy 1, 5. Maxine?
Now, the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from sincere faith.
All right, here is a good conscience and the sincere faith. Paul wanted to be charitable towards others. And ideally, if a conscience has been trained with the right knowledge, it is going to be charitable. It will look and say, we want to be as kind to someone as we can, but there are consciences, are there not, which want to be as unkind as they can to people and they feel good about it? I sure got him. My revenge finally came. And their conscience approves of that kind of thing. Well, that's the opposite of what we want. Similar to that is what we find in Matthew 27 and verse 6.
But the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, "It is not lawful to put them into the treasury, because they are the price of blood."
See what else we've got here. We've got, going to have to hurry things up. John 19 and verse 31, if you want to look at that a little later, you can see that some people have a hypocritical conscience. The conscience can be intimidated. We see that with Pilate, John chapter 19, verses 7 through 8. You see that the conscience is powerful. John the Baptist had been killed by Herod, and yet his conscience is bothering him in a very powerful way. And the conscience is connected to memories. The woman who had a prophet heal her son, the son dies, and she runs out to the prophet and says, you know, basically, my sins are coming back against me. So we don't know exactly what she did as far as wrongs, but her conscience was troubling her. So conscience is a very, very powerful thing. I do want to give you the last 2 points. The conscience is like a window. It needs to let light in, and that light is God's word, as we've seen from 1 Corinthians chapter 8. MacArthur, a denominational preacher, gave this illustration, which I wanted to share. It is reported that a tribe in Africa had an unusual but effective way to test the guilt of an accused person. A group of suspects would be lined up, and the tongue of each one would be touched with a hot knife. If saliva was on the tongue, the blade would sizzle but cause little pain. But if the tongue was dry, the blade would stick and create a vicious, searing burn. The tribe knew that a sense of guilt tends to make a person's mouth dry, and a seared tongue, therefore, was taken as proof of guilt. The making of such a dry mouth, of course, the work of the conscience. So, kind of an interesting